Someone's phone is right there. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. This week we're going to be talking about film gear and the stuff we have, the stuff we like, the stuff we endorse, and the experiences we've had with it. This is a episode for gearheads that was requested by Pastor MacMan in the forum.
Like a year ago.
Or aspiring gearheads.
Oh, come on, Mike. I was about to make a point about how you should actually go to the forum and request stuff because we'll actually do it. And you're all,
yeah,
you have to shit on my parade.
Sorry.
But we're going to be talking about gear in this episode. So if you're not into the tech stuff and we're talking about filmmaking tech, this probably isn't the episode for you. My name, as always, is T. Christie, and I'm sitting here next to Ryan Weber.
Hello.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
Hello.
And Trey the Amazing Stokes.
What up?
So we're talking about film gear here, and I'm actually the outlier because all the equipment that I have is recording gear. I have these mics and the mic stands and all that, which has mostly been paid for by the donations when they eke in. Speaking of donations, anyway, see, I'm just trying to
this
get all of
going
our,
well so
I'm
far.
Trying to get all of our product placement in. But I actually, the last camera that I owned was a Canon XL1S, and I still have it. It's falling apart. But I haven't used it in ages. I'm actually not that much for physically making stuff. Usually when I'm making something, it's either on a computer or on a piano. So I'm not really the guy to ask. Ryan, what kind of stuff do you have? I mean, you've been lately getting into cinematography and really diving deep into all that stuff.
Well, I do think what you just touched on is interesting, kind of delving into the past for just a moment to talk about, to me, take a moment to appreciate the different landscape and gear that you get now as an indie filmmaker versus, you know, when I was a kid. Your XL1S.
I'll take a turn.
Mike took and Mike got the European XL1 version
just because, for the 25.
Just because it's 25 frames a second, you can kind of just reinterpolate that at 24 and be closer to film. And boy, the hacks we would try to do to make something
it's
that
so
looks
close.
Cinematic. Is outstanding. But now
we had to put shit on the front of the lens to put a proper lens on it.
35 adapters and all that kind of good stuff. So so that's interesting, and I don't know, we can get into that or not, whatever we feel like doing. But for my part, at least where I'm at right now, is I've been working steadily, got a little bit of money, and so I'm able to actually sort of invest in having my own little, you know, cinema package. You know,
what does that entail? What do you got?
Well, we should
want to summaries first?
Okay. I guess. I've got a Red Scarlett at this point and a number of accessories that I would think put me at sort of a respectable but not high-end package as far as that goes. I've got kind of my whole thing is sort of like the cheaper but just about as good version of for pretty much everything I have.
You have lots of lights and stuff too.
Yeah, I got some
C stands and
some stuff.
The whole
let's,
bit.
Let's finish going around the room and then we'll
really
get into
adds up.
Yeah,
Mike, what is your current setup gear wise? You used to have a Red.
I did have a Red, and then I sold it, and then I had a Scarlett, and then I sold it because I went, wait, why? Because Ryan has a Scarlett, and I know a couple other people with Scarlett, and it's like, why in the hell am I going to have my own camera sitting around when
Mike's the smart one?
So, I actually currently do not really have any of my own gear right now, but I'm still trying to keep up with what's going on in the industry and keep aware of it because you need to know that kind of stuff, even if you're not necessarily going to own it. But at the moment, the gear I just invested in for me was finally putting together a new desktop to actually work with footage once it is shot by somebody's camera and put it together into a finished product.
Trey, you must have a bunch of stuff lying around.
I do. I'm one step behind in terms of image quality because currently my camera that I possess is the Panasonic HD 24P camera, which was the, you know, kind of the go-to a couple of years ago before the Red really came.
Are you talking about the HBX 200?
Yeah.
Or a different one? Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's that's a good all-around camera. It shoots high def. It shoots,
That's what we shot Ryan vs. Dorkman 2 on.
Exactly.
For those who are...
It'll even shoot in SD if you want to downgrade all the way back to those ancient days, which came up because we used it to shoot the final bits of Ping 5 just a couple weekends ago. And there was the question of, well, we can shoot in high def now, even though the rest of Ping 5 was not high def because you couldn't get high def when we
six
were shooting
years ago.
It. So it's like, well, we can shoot high def now, but then will it match or not? You know, so like, should we actually take a HD camera, but actually crank the knob all the way down to SD to shoot with for this thing or whatever? So that was kind of an interesting quandary to be in. So I have that as a camera, which is a great, at least HD is a standard.
It's very good.
HD is great. You know, HD is obviously what most of us go on. If you want to, you know, project on at the Cinerama Dome, you're going to want the red. But, you know, HD is awfully good. What I do have that still is worth having is I did back when I was acquiring more gear. I acquired quite a bit of audio gear. So I've got like 6 wireless mics and 2 shotguns.
Oh, no
and,
shit.
Yeah. And,
I didn't realize you had all the audio stuff.
Yeah, I've got lots of cables and plugs and connectors and all that kind of stuff. A lot of that stuff I still have. And that's useful because that hasn't like gone away in terms of, well, no one uses these anymore. You know, those are still current.
It records sound, dude.
You plug them into whatever camera you happen to be using now. So I have, I still have I have several tripods and I have a crane. My crane gets a lot of use. In fact, I just rented my crane out to Laura Beth, our DP, who is,
like an 8-foot crane or something.
Yeah, it's like 12 feet long when you assemble the whole thing and you put it on a tripod, it can go get 14 feet in the air. And, it's amazing how much a crane and a dolly is what makes something look uber professional.
For sure.
When you have camera moves going on, that's when things, that looks slick all of a sudden because, for one thing, it takes longer to set up. So if you have more money, you have more time, and then you have time to do things like crane shots and dolly shots. So, and I have a lot of homemade, weird, wacky gear. I have a homemade kind of pseudo Steadicam rig that I made, and I have a homemade, car mounts, and I have homemade, hood mounts and all those kind of crazy things that I was doing.
Stuff that you make because you need it, and then you have it.
Exactly,
now.
And then I have it, So I've got that, and of course, I have all that right when I kind of stopped making my own films on a regular basis, but it was great to pull all that stuff out to shoot Pink Five with again, and kind of put me in the mood of I should probably start using this stuff more because it's really fun to just be able to plunk a camera down and do stuff. I mean, you guys have been doing a little side project recently that I'm not involved in. Fine, but that's I miss that. In fact, when we were shooting Pink Five, we're doing the Pink Five final episode, which of course is huge, grandiose, every shot's an effect shot and it's 20 minutes long and God help me, but we got to talking while we were making that, while we were on that set, talking about missing the old days, which is how Pink Five began, where Pink Five was just, I got a camera and we got a couple of hours, let's just make a thing and kind of bust it out, and I really made me long to that again.
In this group of people, there's been sort of a global switchback to that, because we've all spent the last 5 or 6 years, all like everyone is on like the same sync cycle on this one. We all spent the last 5 or 6 years kind of getting the careers to where they are healthy again and sort of set behind the, let's make a short film, let's make a this, let's make a that, let's do this. We have writing projects, we have effects projects, but making shit, which is where we all started, has sort of fallen by the wayside, and everyone has sort of gotten back in the mood of wanting to do shit again at the same time.
I didn't think you'd want to hang out with like idiot kids till 4 in the morning. That's just why I didn't mention it.
If you want the old dude hanging around.
Yeah, no.
The invitation should be assumed open at all.
Yeah,
I missed that totally. And,
I'll totally put you on the invite next time.
I mean, in fact, we obviously the Kickstarter program was about doing the final chapter, which is what we're currently involved heavily in doing. But we also said we would make a prequel episode, and God help me, what was I thinking? But I have an idea for a prequel episode. But I actually was talking, on that weekend when we were shooting, we were talking about the prequel episode isn't going to be like another huge grandiose thing. Much more garage bandy. It'll be fun, entertaining, and all that. We hope, but it's not going to be another gigantic epic, obviously, because who wants another one of those in their life? Not me. But we're talking about we're going to load up a van, we're going to get the cast and a tiny crew, and we're going to go out and spend a weekend like gunning and running and
making a short.
Get that done, and that's the prequel. So I'm actually looking forward to that, but I can't let myself really think about that till I deliver the final one.
Ryan, when did you buy your Red? You got it a year and a half.
I pre-ordered it as soon as it was announced, basically. I mean, as soon as I could. Because
the Scarlet.
The Scarlet, yeah, that's right. I had always been sort of like, keeping up with all the new stuff. And I had the HVX 200 as well, which is totally a cool camera. That's what Trey was just talking about, the one that can do HD. But it can also do a lot of really neat things like variable frame rates. And
yes.
Do things at like 22 frames a second or 60. Or I think you can do 60 at in HD, which is really progressive, not interlaced either.
Yeah.
And
4 audio channels. It's a good camera.
No, it's really cool. It was a big deal at the time. And
even when I got the Red, we'd have the HVX and we would be running sound to that because it does such a great job of recording.
It's much better
sound.
On sound. We shot Arc on the HVX, which was state of the art at the time. red was around, but it wasn't like a standard really. It was like sort of a, you know, vaporware still to a lot of people.
Yeah.
The HPX we shot Archon, and you know, I just really short, I just kept the camera afterwards. when companies go out of business, they don't you know, check to see who signed out the gear last. Apparently, it's crazy.
Wow.
So okay. There you go. But yeah, it's still, I mean, it's going to be a while, I think, before something's going to come along to replace the HVX. I mean, there's mm-hmm. other HD cameras, but you know, as long as it works, it's still the standard.
Yeah, there are other ones. Panasonic actually sort of the intention was to replace the HVX 200 was the AF 100, which is also one that I got sort of right when it came out, and it's kind of its big features are that it's interchangeable lens camera. But it's at its core kind of like a DSLR in that it's a rolling shutter, and that's a Micro Four Thirds camera.
Wasn't it supposed to have a better rolling shutter than a DSLR?
Yeah,
that was like its main selling point.
Yeah, it was claimed to have done better. It wouldn't do the aliasing sort of problems that you get in like the 5D. You know, if you had very very sharp edges or brick walls or patterns or, you know, things like that, you kind of get stair-steppy things or moiré and stuff like that. And so this is supposed to have optical stuff that kind of knocks that back and makes that better. It's supposed to have a better rolling shutter, and all those things are true, but they're still, you know, noticeable in a lot of the kind of everyday type of situations that you might get in. Not severely, and obviously not anywhere as bad as the 5D, but respectable, and that kind of won me over just in terms of what it was claimed to be. And so I went and got one, and it was actually very nice. It's actually very good low light as well. And so if you find it available at the same price point as like an HVX, I might recommend it above that, especially if you have lenses. That's a whole other question, and that's a new thing for when you're getting started and you're kind of looking for what to get. You have to, you know, consider that as well.
How did the decision process go when you were getting the Scarlett? Did you ever consider getting like a 7D or anything like that? I mean, did you ever consider going with a DSLR camera?
No, not personally. I mean, the 5D is amazing, and you can do all kinds of great stuff with it. And I get a lot of emails from younger folks who are kind of like, I'm just trying to get into this. I'm right at the beginning. I don't have anything, and I want to know what's the smartest thing I can do with my money to get something that I can try to shoot films on, or movies, or fan films, or whatever. And when you're in that low price point, I pretty much always just recommend get yourself a 5D or a 7D. You know, there's no faster way to something where you can actually have some nice depth of field. You can be shooting in 24. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, get whatever kind of shots you want as long as you get the lenses for it. And, you know, a fine zoom lens will get you there. It's not perfect and it's not ideal, but you can go a long way with those. I mean, I think
Sad Max was on a 7D, which isn't any major statement because there's nothing to see in that movie.
Yeah, but you could have shot it on an iPhone.
Could have shot that on anything. I actually literally considered shooting it on a webcam to be more
authentic
in line with the thing, but I was like, you know what? People will go with it. Let's not. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and actually do this properly.
Yeah. So I do to finish that point. Like, I do recommend it heavily, especially if you're in a certain price point. But for me, I was not looking at it with that sort of that criteria. I was looking at I'm interested in getting as close as I can to a movie. And the Scarlett is the first thing that just sort of, it took Red, which was like very enticing and exciting, and then dropped it down into, you know, pushing the ceiling of the price point that I might be able to consider. And I said, okay, that's it. You've done it. You know?
Yeah. A Scarlett is pretty much literally a Red one in a much smarter and more manageable form factor. So
exactly, that's a huge part of it too, which for me, there's a huge element of the form factor in terms of the Red One is a beast. Thing is a giant bastard of a camera.
You know, when we shot my first experience with the Red, I've never actually handled a Red or owned a Red, but my first experience even using a Red for anything was 2010 Moby Dick for the Asylum, because they shoot on the Red. And so it's the first time I'd ever dealt with a project that used a Red. And and I was like, well, okay, you know, the image quality is awesome and all that stuff, but it's like, that thing is bigger than 35 millimeter cameras that I've used on projects. It was like, that thing is, I mean, it's like, especially because it's so angular and has like shit shooting off in all different directions and, you know, points. It's like, it's like a satellite. It's like something that fell from space that you have to like point it, you know. And
once it's all decked out and everything.
Where's the lens on this thing? Oh, this is the lens on the front. This is the front? Okay, I guess that's the front of it. Okay, fine. Because once it's covered with all the gear that makes it, you know, movie quality, it's like, damn, that thing is huge. And requires just as many humans to hover over it and lay hands on it and, you know, and touch it as 35 used to. Mm-hmm. So it's like, other than the fact that you are literally eliminating the filmic process of having to deal with physical film, it's it's really back to 35 in terms of your workflow on set. It's just people's jobs are slightly different. So yeah, I was amazed by like, wow, this is, you know, yes, this is in many ways, it's an improvement over physical film. But in other ways, we've just basically just ballooned this process to the point where it's the equivalent of physical film as far as on set,
right,
and having to use it, which was kind of an interesting revelation. I thought it would be handier and easier to use. And it's like our camera, our DP slash camera operator, Alex, is an amazing DP, is a huge strapping fireman of a guy. And he'd have to put this thing on his shoulder and, you know.
Oh, it's murder.
It's awful. It was like, yeah, no one else could even do it.
It's tough.
Yeah. So that was kind of an interesting revelation about the Red. But there's no denying, obviously, what you get, you know, your image is stunning. But
so once that gets crammed into an epic.
So you're saying now there's that, but smaller?
Exactly.
Now I'm getting interested.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was my process, which is just like, you know, Mike was an early adopter on Red. And so, you know, we had the experience to shoot with that and stuff. And it's a big camera, even when it's very, very lightweight, you know, decked
out. Stripped down.
Yeah. And, but, you know, it's not, for me, the sort of the main criteria is, can you take the camera and just hold it in your hands and get a shot you want?
Yes.
Can you hold it over your head and look down at something? Can you hold it near the ground and walk around with it? And it's like, you really can't do that with a Red
One.
Yeah,
you really can't.
You really can't.
It's like looking at a Panavision camera around.
Yeah, the nice thing about the Scarlett or the Epic is that it is small enough that even with, you know, a fairly normal amount of stuff bolted onto it, you can just sort of run and gun and get those kinds of shots that you want, which is very important to me.
And just not to date the podcast or anything, but you know, just talking about Scarlett, how old is this podcast talking about the Scarlett?
Right.
At least my dad had a Scarlett. What is the price point of a Scarlett? What do they go for?
I believe they just dropped the prices.
They did just drop the price to, I think, just under 10 for like an actual. Or I don't know if they dropped the price on the Scarlett because that was pretty low, but they dropped the prices on the Epic significantly.
Okay.
What is the difference between the Scarlett and the Epic?
The Epic is
the Epic also a Red?
The Epic is also a Red.
Okay.
They have the same form factor. It's got some more features to it, like it can actually shoot in 5K. Whereas the Scarlett
5K, here we go.
Yeah, the Scarlett can shoot in at 5K resolution, but only at 12 frames per second. The Epic can shoot at 5K resolution at up to 96 frames per second, and it can shoot in 5K with the HDRX mode, which is basically shooting two streams of video at once.
So you get both stops of it.
One exposed, yeah, higher than the other,
so that
it kind of blends it together, so you can get that. The Scarlett does have HDRX in it, but it's more limited.
You have to be at a smaller resolution to be able to do that.
Smaller resolution, smaller file size. Yeah.
Did you say the Epic can run at 5K at 90 frames per second while recording two streams of video?
I don't know if it can.
Not all of those things at once.
Oh, okay. But it can do five. It can
not
do
yet.
5K.
Not yet.
I believe it can do 5K HDRX, and it can do 5K 96 frames per second. It can't do both at once.
The difference between the two is really that they're mostly the same thing. They're superficial.
Same case, right?
Things. No, that's actually a little different, and it's a little lamer on the Scarlett, which I think is mainly just to get you to want to have a cooler looking camera. But the only real significant difference in the hardware of them is that the chips are the ones that were Epic chips that didn't quite make the cut, and so they go into the Scarlett, and they're still fully capable of doing all kinds of great stuff, but you can't quite run them as hot as you could on the Epics. And so it's basically,
they put a governor on the Epic chips.
You have the same sensor acquiring the same images through all the same architecture, except it just can't lay down as much data as fast as the Epic can.
Yeah, not reliably.
Basically,
they're like, here's the cap where we know it will work reliably, but if we want to put that in an Epic, it's got to be way up here, and that's not going to work. So rather than just throwing it out, they went, well, how about that's the max feature set of a different camera,
and we don't have to throw all these away.
We don't have to throw all these away.
Mike, were you not happy with your Red One?
I was pretty happy with it, yeah.
I mean, it was just a financial thing. It's like, well, I'm sitting on what could be 14 grand if I sell this thing off.
Basically, yeah, it was kind of, well, I'm not, because the Scarlets and Epics and stuff were around, it's like, The form factor is really unwieldy and stuff like that, and I was never particularly a fan of that, although I was a fan of, you know, the images and stuff like that. But, you know, the form factor wasn't great, and it's not going to rent anymore because the market has just been flooded with Scarlets, and so and at the time I was picking up a Scarlett as well. And so it didn't make
sense. How long did you have the Scarlett?
Probably about a month.
Oh my God.
Before I realized, wait a second, this is retarded. And so I had already sold off my red, and then I found someone who wanted a Scarlet, because the Scarlets were already back ordered, so I actually was able to pretty much get back what
you
I
flipped
paid
a Scarlet.
For. Yeah, basically. Nice. So so that's how that went, and not that there was nothing wrong with either camera, and I you know, we've shot several things on the Scarlet and the red, because Brandon is the one who bought the red from me. So I still
most recently we shot something with both cameras on the same setups at the same time, and you know, it intercuts completely seamlessly.
It,
of course,
it looks great. I'm still very happy that those cameras exist, and very happy to
have access to them,
and to use them. But it didn't make sense to me anymore to particularly own them necessarily. It's, for what I'm doing right now.
Seems like the equivalent of, you know, owning a jet ski that you leave in the garage.
Yeah, exactly.
For, you know, 364 days of the year. It's like, well, maybe you should just rent that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So well, I guess Ryan is the one who actually, do you get your money's worth out of a Scarlet?
Well, that's an interesting question. And the answer would be yes, if I were actually renting it out, which was always my intent. But, you know, it's a dangerous thing, because I'm kind of like, well, I didn't get the side handle, because I'm like, okay, I'm going to actually go to like a V-mount battery type, which is, you know, sort of a bigger, beefier, kind of more standardized battery type that already exists. You can run longer with it as opposed to the red thing. And so I'm like, okay, well, I can't rent it out until I have that. And so I have that. And I'm like, but no one would do this without like a shoulder thing. And then it's like, you give a mouse a cookie sort of thing, where it's just like, now I'm here, you know, 10 grand later, and I've got a package. And I'm like, well, I guess I could rent it out now. But I'm having it repaired at the moment. But once I get it back, I think I'm going to more deliberately and try to get it rented out. As far as sort of getting value and worth out of it, the problem was is I just wasn't shooting a lot with it. You know, when I first got it, I did a lot of tests, because I was very, you know, interested in shooting green screen and all that kind of thing. And it's been great, everything I've thrown at it, really. I've learned a lot about it. I think there's definitely a learning curve that there isn't with a lot of other cameras, especially if you're new to the red workflow. But I wasn't shooting a lot with it. And so it's been nice in the last few months that we've all kind of deliberately gotten together and said, hey, we should make things, just get together and do stuff. And that's been extremely rewarding, because I'm finally actually, you know, putting it into practice, and I'm shooting and, you know, learning a lot about it and what gear is actually useful on a set and which isn't, and kind of starting to actually go through experiences and learn about what's working and what's not.
I'll ask you guys this on the subject of gear and sets in general. What is the you got a camera, you got some lights, and you got mics, you're fine. What is the one piece of like, oh, I want that. I want one of those. That would make my life so much easier. What comes to mind? Once you literally have the ability to record video and audio and put photons on it, what's the next thing where you're like, you know, it would be really nice. You know, it's asking a lot. Would it be like a crane? Would it be a dolly? Would it be a Western dolly?
Well,
I mean,
would
it be a nice DAT recorder or something?
There's always another one of those right around the corner, whatever the last thing is you bought. And for a while, they seem almost mandatory. Like, you have 15mm rails in a whole thing, so you can get it on your shoulder. Okay, right. That's great. Now, oh, but you really need a follow focus, so you don't have to be reaching up on the lenses and, you know, things like that. And it's like, okay, well, you also kind of really need a mat box if you're going to go outside. You don't get these flare, you know. And
you need a monitor.
NDs.
You need a monitor. You need ND filters.
If we start going outside, you know? But I was going to say monitor. The next thing that we're going to want is a monitor.
That was the thing on Pink 5. We're like, do we still have a monitor for this thing? Do we even have an HD monitor? Will it output an SD? Because do we have to get an HD monitor? You know, we didn't even know with this camera.
Right.
So
what about like a nice crane or something, like a dolly? That kind of thing.
I bought the crane years ago, and I've gotten a lot of mileage out of it. It's it's a very simple rig, and I actually did some customizing to myself. But boy, it immediately takes something to the next level. That's been, like I said, my, you know, DP Laura Beth from more. She said, "Can I borrow from you next weekend?" Because she was shooting out of the Epic, and this crane is like, I bought it like 6 years ago, so it's meant to hold like a, you know, a Sony DV camera.
Right.
And then we like put the HDV camera. It would never hold a Red. But she was like, "Do you think it would hold an Epic?" And I'm like, I've never seen an Epic in the wild. I don't even know what that looks like. But she's
like a baby's toy.
Yeah. She was like, I think so. Therefore, she reported back, my crane can hold an Epic. So there you go. So
what are you gonna name it?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally epic, dude. But
can even use the crane as a dolly a little bit.
You can totally use it as a dolly. Well, you can put it on a dolly. I have a whole rig that I built also of my own with little roller skates and the whole thing, and, you know, rails that I set up, and you can dolly and crane and you can do some amazing stuff with that. And it really frees you up a lot. In fact, once you've got the camera on the crane, you can just kind of like pretend it's a tripod and just kind of swing it over this way, swing it over that way, and do whatever. So that's a huge step forward, I think. And a dolly rig is also, I mean, obviously now you're talking about very large things and
you gotta
the size
have
of vehicle
garage,
you have to
yeah.
travel around. I find the slipperiest slope is lighting because, of course,
you can
there,
never
is,
have
there is no such thing as having too many movie lights when you want to yeah. try and do anything whatsoever. Sure. And the gear that goes with it, all the stands and the flags and the, you know, all that. I mean, that's a you know,
and that's
a huge, huge thing.
Yeah,
and that's really one of the things that makes the thing look professional. I mean, you can have a Scarlett and you can shoot in a living room and get that, you know, good grainy, you know, grungy look. But if you want to be professional, you're still stuck with having
you
to have
gotta
a,
light the damn thing.
You've got to have a.
That's
a
grip you never have enough lights and C-stands.
Yeah. That's exactly the sort of twist ending to this podcast that I was going to bring up, which is like this is all well and good, but really the real secret is lighting.
Yeah,
and that's what I've gradually come to realize.
I have movie quality gear, and I can still make something that I could have shot on an iPhone because
exactly
I don't
right.
have a grip truck full of lighting
and
gear.
And converse to that. If you light it really well, you can shoot it on an iPhone and get away with some pretty nice stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Or 7D or whatever.
In the chat, they're asking, where do you get a crane? Where'd you get yours?
Laura Beth was asking me. Like
B&H Photo or something?
Literally, it was, I got it off a site of, I think there are literally people that this is what they do. They make these, and I just happened to see it or someone had recommended it. I was looking at it. I don't have it right now because Laura Beth still has it, but I was looking at trying to find if there was a label on it or something because I literally bought it off the internet. They were selling them on eBay. They had different sizes. They made some other bits and pieces of gear, like their own kind of Steadicam rig. And it was just an independent company.
Was that in the $2,000-$3,000 range for what you got?
No, it was $300.
Are you shitting
me?
They do have some real cheap ones.
Yeah.
Because
you have to put it on a tripod.
Right. It's
only just a piece of, it's a cable and a piece of metal, but you know, it's a pretty simple rig. But once I tricked it out, I want to say it was called a smart crane.
That sounds like a thing.
Smartcrane.com or something like that. It's extremely simple. It's literally a rod, a long, you know, metal bar, and it's got a cable rig where if you mount it to the head of the tripod, so when you tilt the tripod control, just like you would if the camera was on the tripod, it translates that out to the head of the crane. So you can't pan, but you can tilt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you can go up, but you can also counter tilt back down, so you can stay locked on.
Nifty.
I just gotten it. You can tell too. I just gotten it the week before we shot Woody Burns.
Mm-hmm.
And you see,
and there's a great shot of that.
The whole thing is shot on the crane.
Yeah,
everything is crane shots. We're doing sweeping over panorama over the top. We're doing highs and lows. You know, we're doing deep and you know, you can see it. We used it in Pink Five as well. You can see it a couple times in Pink Five.
You're probably referring to Smart Rig crane.
Could be that. Could be that, but I'd have
to show them the picture. Is it?
Nope.
Oh,
never mind.
No, we have
this is for building stuff.
The answer to the question is I honestly don't remember. I literally bought it off. It was just a group of company offline. It felt like it was kind of a mom and pop kind of organization that, you know, these guys had just a workshop, you know, same way like Ryan builds sabers. You know, he's got the technology to make these, and you know, he's got enough metal technology to make a metal thing that he sells. So
Joe Columban in the chat is asking the difference between a crane and a jib, and I think you're talking about a jib essentially.
Technically, yes, it's a jib. You're right. The more accurate name is a jib.
What is the difference?
A jib is a baby, is like a pony to a horse. Like there's the jib and there's the crane. Like a crane is a big.
If you want to go online and look for something affordable that can get a camera up to 12 feet in the air.
Ported jib.
Look
Try
for
that
a
name
jib.
Too. Try ported jib.
Yeah. I was just looking that one up.
Then that's the bigger, that's the fancier one, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So ported jib.
So porta P-O-R-T-A dash J-I-B.
There you go. The one I have is there's one that has the one on the front page that Michael's just showing me. It has a parallelogram rig. The one I got is the smaller one that literally just sits on a tripod of its own, and it's very simple. It's only $300 or something at the time. But it, you know, it's amazing how much mileage I've gotten out of that thing.
Hey, Mike, go ahead.
I was just going to throw out a recommendation for a site that I was looking around at and had all kinds of cheap stuff like that. They have cranes and whatnot. Not, I think, as cheap as what you're talking about, but it's called Pro Aim, and I believe their site is actually Pro Aim, proaimshop.com. But if you just search for Pro Aim, you'll wind up there eventually. And they've got a whole slew of things, everything from, you know, LED lighting through to rigs to matte boxes to, you know, stands and cranes.
It's online film tools
and all that kind of stuff. And they've got all kinds of things, and it's out of Hong Kong or whatever. And so it's rather scary because the language is a little broken English. There are some images that don't quite work, and the checkout process feels like you get scammed when you do it because it leads you to a page where you're like, wait, did it go through? Oh my God.
Yeah.
And then you wait weeks for it to get to you. But they do have some pretty cool, you know, more affordable kinds of stuff. That's where I got my shoulder rig, which is sort of a shoulder pad. And then a little mount for your camera, and then two little arms, and it's something. It was like 100.
That's not a Zacuto?
No, no, that was $150 from ProAim, and I just bought two LED lights from them, and I think a couple other things as well. But I've had really good luck finding these sort of cheaper off-brand alternatives of things. Like I got an excellent follow focus that way, and all kinds of stuff.
I think it was the same company, the Porgy. I had one that worked for the camera. They had a little remote follow focus thing. It was a universal follow focus where it literally just would spin a wheel and would, you know, had to figure out your own way of making it clamp to your camera, but it would look like, you know, it would turn your zoom for you. Mm-hmm. And then you had a little remote for it.
Oh, wireless you're talking about.
Well, it was wired. It was meant to,
you know, but you could get away from it.
But like if it was on the jib or whatever, where you could actually pull focus or do a zoom.
Got it.
Remotely while it was up on the jib.
Hey, Mike, here's one for you.
Yeah.
Can a MacBook edit 4K or do you need to get a dedicated workstation?
Well,
you can, in quotation marks.
Yeah, you can edit
doesn't
it.
Doesn't Red
depends
do like
on
the native proxy thing that's awesome? And
not anymore. They don't really bother with that anymore.
Because they just assume your computer can handle it?
Kind of, it seems like.
That was so awesome that happened.
To be honest, like you really can do it, but you just have to be working on it in like 1/8 or 1/16 resolution.
Yeah,
and then you can pretty much kind of run around in
real time. You don't have to transcode it.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way, but you can't work in full 4K, you know, full debayer on a MacBook.
Yeah.
And not even really on a workstation unless you invest in a Red Rocket card, which then
is like $2,000, right?
Five.
Okay then.
It's a $5,000 card.
I mean even Asylum will bump everything down to HD for their actual post.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you can work on it without having to transcode it, but
I mean,
if
you do an offline, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as you're editing it at 16 and then you just rematch it up with your high-res footage,
sure,
it's fine. But you can't play it back at 4K.
I mean, right. To me, just not having to transcode is a delight in that
huge
I just take files off of a thing and put it on my computer, and then I start cutting with it. I mean, yes, I'm running at it in 1/8 resolution, but I can just chop it up and look at it and play it back in real time without having to do a lot of special stuff.
Which sort of maybe brings us to the other half of gear is like, okay, sure, so you shot footage. Now what? In terms of your post flow, you know, and yes, you can get the fanciest camera in the world, but then you have to get a pretty high end editing rig to actually be able to put that image on a screen and do anything with it. I think we're pretty much all, you know, straight Adobe people in this room, from what I understand.
Yeah, Mike was part of the Final Cut ecosystem for a long time.
So was I.
Yeah. Oh, but then they did the whole FCPX thing, which was kind of hard to recover from.
To me, the tipping point on that was, you know, Final Cut's perfectly great and everything, and then but you couldn't bring in image sequences, which is kind of odd.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's been so weird for me the whole time because everyone's like, why would I need to? I'm like, you are being obstinate. People deal in frame sequences constantly.
That's right. The world is
But for me,
the minute I discovered frames and frame sequences as opposed to AVIs and QuickTimes, I was like, I'm never going back.
Why wouldn't you do it like this?
Yeah. For me, the main thing that switched me to Premiere was just the fact that you could natively, inherently, seamlessly bring right in Red footage and handle it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was really just like, okay. And then I'm like, oh, all the shortcuts are the same. All the windows are more or less the same. There's really no learning curve to jump across from one to the other. And so I said, okay, great. I'm going to stay in the Adobe world here.
I haven't owned a desktop workstation in about 6 years. I've done all my work when I'm working from home and I'm doing freelance. And what I'm doing is really, really computer intensive, 3D rendering and shit like that.
On a laptop.
I've been working on a laptop this whole time. I had a Sony Vaio i7 from 2006 to 2012, and I was running on that. It eventually slowed down a bit, and you clean it up here and there and everywhere, but, you know, whatever. And it was enough to do my stuff. It wasn't incredibly fast. I obviously don't... If I was going to be home Lance-ing constantly, I would invest in a small render farm, get a few little nodes that you can link together and have it render for you so I don't have to dedicate my laptop to it. Because when I'm rendering, for instance, right now, this is a true statement, I'm rendering stereoscopic HD, a quad HD, stereoscopic 200,000 instanced trees and voxel clouds on my laptop, and it happens over the course of a few hours, not a few years. So my current computer is Oh, I fucking forgot. I don't remember. It's actually what it was built for is a gaming computer. It's kind of a modded gaming computer, but it's got an incredibly fast processor, an incredibly good image card, graphics card, and you know, a lot of storage and all that. But I haven't owned a workstation in forever because my laptop is strong enough that I can pretty much do everything I need to do with it. If I was going to move forward from that, like I said, I'd get a Blender farm or something like that. But that was I was able to cut an HD short on that and play it in real time, blah, 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 blah. The only problem with this computer right now is that the sound card kind of sucks, but that's I rarely use that. So,
lame.
Mike, what's the deal with your Hackintosh? What was your goal? What were you like, it's not worth doing it unless I can, and you aimed for that?
Well, I just wanted a new computer because I haven't, I likewise, in a sense, haven't, I have a workstation, but I haven't got a new one in 5 years. And I was working on one of the, I think, original generation Mac Pros, either the original generation or the second generation, right after they switched from Power Mac to Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I had just gotten to the point of, you know, to the question of editing 4K and stuff like that. The computer was just starting to choke on, you know.
Computers get old.
Yeah, they get old. And